I don't want to do that because then EMT is going to show up on scene and stop providing CPR for me so that they can get a heart. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's quite how it works.
Well, you bring up a very good point. There's a lot of myths.
So I got a question from our president, John Wojciechowski, who's going into the very deep lore of Grey's Anatomy season 15. And his question is, if there's one organ, but there's two people who are viable for it, and one's higher up on the list, hypothetically, in this situation of Grey's Anatomy season 15 again, it is an old crotchety smoker guy versus a very adorable young child. Is there actually like a priority system, or does it just go to him because he's the top of the list?
There was a kidney donor this past year who was in his 90s, and he was in great health. He was able to save a life by donating a kidney. And being in his 90s, he was not too old.
The husband and the daughter were able to listen to their mother's, the mother and the wife's heartbeat for the first time. Any other person. Yeah.
That's emotional.
So we have that. Yeah. So we were able to, first time we were able to get them together to do that meeting.
Saving lives.
Saving lives.
Saving lives. Saving lives. Saving lives. Saving lives. Saving lives.
By promoting safety and health through education, services, and products, this is Utah Safety Podcast. Speaking up for safety.
To you live from the Utah Safety Council. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We have some very special guests today here at the Safety Council. We're going to begin with introductions. I'm going to keep it brief for the Safety Council, and then we'll have Donor Connect take it away. So we'll start with me. My name is Yvette Stephanie. I'm the Emergency Care Program Manager here at the Safety Council. And that there at the very end is Stone, Michael Stone, street name Stone, I guess, is what he said.
Yeah.
He is our traffic program manager, and if you've been here before, you should know that that's your go-to guy. So, so we'll give you guys the floor now to introduce yourselves.
My name is Rufus Tolbert. I'm the Multicultural Outreach Specialist for Donor Connect. I've been there 4 years and loving it.
My name is Mark Dixon. I'm the Director of Public Education and Public Relations at Donor Connect. I've been there coming up on 4 years, and we really appreciate you guys having us as guests today. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. What kind of work do you guys do over Donor Connect? Just for people who aren't super familiar, maybe just clicked on this and was like, what is this about?
Donor Connect is an organ procurement organization, OPO.
Mm-hmm.
And we serve as a bridge between people that are organ donors and people that need transplants. And so we handle all of the logistics associated with organ recovery, transportation, and ultimately allowing someone that is in need of an organ, eye, or tissue transplant to receive that transplant.
Yeah, so we're one of three in the state. So Intermountain Health and the University of Utah, and then ourselves. And we cover all of Utah, southern Idaho, and eastern Nevada, and western Wyoming.
Wow.
Yeah. Quite a large space.
Very large.
So, yeah.
Well, cool. And what kind of difficulties you guys face in like organ procurement? Because I was looking over the stats you guys provided me. It said like less than 1% of everybody is a viable organ donor in a sense. Like the stars kind of have to align. So,
yeah, there are tens of thousands of people who have become part of what we call the registry. And so the registry is basically a large database that captures all of the persons that are willing to be organ, eye, and tissue donors. Mm-hmm. So if you, for example, go and get a driver's license and you check that box where it indicates that you're willing to be an organ donor and your driver license has that little heart insignia on it, you're willing to be an organ donor. But when it comes right down to it, of all of those tens of thousands of people that have said yes to organ donation, only about 1% of persons ultimately end up as organ donors. Hmm. And that's because when someone passes away, it has to be in a very specific kind of a way that allows for a successful transplant to take place. Organs have to be viable. Makes no sense whatsoever for someone to receive a heart or a liver or a kidney if it's going to fail.
Yeah, for sure.
So with that, how long does that process take for the organ donor to have that donated to the next person? How long does that take?
Excellent question.
Yeah, it kind of varies.
Okay.
So there's several parts to that, Yvette. When someone is in the hospital, they've been admitted because they've had some sort of a traumatic incident in their life. They're admitted to the hospital. We have members of our clinical team who are at the hospital and who are monitoring the condition of people.
Okay.
Now, I don't want anybody to feel like there's the Grim Reaper kind of a situation
okay.
where somebody is waiting in the wings for somebody to die. It's not like that.
Okay.
There is dignity and there is sensitivity that is exercised in those situations, and monitoring is taking place. And you know what? Our team is hoping for the very, very best possible outcome for someone who has suffered injury or trauma. We want the best possible outcome. We want someone to recover if they possibly can.
I mean, ideally, I think that we're kind of like how a lot of people feel about an emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
We want it to be quiet and empty. That means things are going well.
Right.
But unfortunately, life is life, and you know, the only constant in life is death and passing. And so, with that, if you can provide an organ so that someone else can live, because that could be a mother, a father,
right,
brother,
right,
sister. You know, we all have it. And it's one of those things that's you never really think about it until you need it.
Right.
You know, we don't know anything about organ transplantation or organ donation until all of a sudden your kidney's failing. And then you want to know everything about it and you want to be at the top of the list and those kinds of things. And that's why it's important for people to go and become organ donors.
Okay.
And you can do that through like www.donorconnect.life. We'll take you to our webpage and then you can just go in there and you can sign up. You can learn more information about it, those kinds of things.
And Yvette, you asked about the time frame.
Right.
So someone is in the hospital at some point. If the prognosis is grim, then members of our clinical team, our donor family services team, they will approach the loved ones of that person who's in the hospital and have that conversation with them about the possibility of that person being an organ, eye, or tissue donor.
Okay.
And then it's a matter of that person progressing to the point of being deceased, being declared dead. And then for each organ, whether it be the heart, and let me tell you, there's several organs that can be recovered. There's the heart, kidneys, liver, lungs can be recovered. Those are the primary organs that are transplanted. And there's, let's call it shelf life. There's a shelf life that each of those different organs has. Heart is the shortest shelf life. A heart that is recovered from someone needs to be transplanted within 4 to 6 hours.
Wow.
Kidneys have a longer shelf life. It's up to 12 hours.
Okay.
And so that's why often if we recover a heart within the state of Utah, for example, it's unlikely that that's going to leave the state. It's unlikely that we could send, transport a heart to the East Coast, for example, for transplant, because of that amount of time that it takes to be viable when it's transplanted.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's a lot of things that go into, you know, because we have our teams that will be at the hospitals, and when they're noticing that there's a potential donor, then they'll activate our transportation team, and those guys have to go in and grab blood, and it has to be sent out to get, you know, to see if it's going to, you know, if it's something that will be there, what other issues that are there. And then our surgical recovery teams are activated. So there's like a bunch of different moving parts, and they're all coming together. And then if that person, you know, unfortunately, if they transition, then that starts a kind of a different set of processes where it's like, okay, now we've got this. Now we're looking and our other teams are looking at to who would be a viable candidate for this, who's on the list, where they're located, and those kinds of things. I mean, we get like Life Flight is involved all the time. It's a big production.
I'm imagining an emergency care room scene. So I think you're hitting all the check marks for that. Yeah. Sounds intense. So
now, Mike, you brought up that statistic about 1% of people being actually able to be donors.
Mm-hmm.
That is because when a person passes away, for example, at home, let's say someone has some traumatic event, a car accident, and they pass away in an accident like that, and they're not in the hospital when they pass away, they're not on a ventilator when they pass away, they're not qualified to be organ, eye, and tissue donors for those reasons, because they haven't passed away in a manner that allows for their organs to be viable for transplant.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys are dispelling that rumor all the time, because like I've just handing out the pamphlets in my classes, I always hear, well, like, I don't want to do that because then EMT is going to show up on scene and stop providing CPR for me so that they can get a heart. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's quite how it works.
Well, you bring up a very good point. There's a lot of myths.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
One myth is that, oh my goodness, if I have that heart on my driver license that indicates I'm willing to be an organ, eye, and tissue donor, well, they won't try as hard.
Yeah.
Nothing could be further from the truth. Doctors don't even look at your driver's license.
Yeah, or EMTs.
EMTs. They don't look at your license.
Hold on, let me check your car.
When they're trying to
quick.
Save your life.
They're down there doing CPR, and they're like, hey, check his license. Yeah. No, it doesn't.
It's like, hold on.
They don't do that. Wait, hold on. Let's see what, you know, I mean, it's bad enough we look at insurance, and they're like, okay,
Okay, good to know. I was one of those people. Thank you, Stone.
Yeah, I just wanted to dispel that, because even some of our staff members, I'm not going to start naming names or anything like that, are like, yeah, if I got that, I have less care in a hospital. People are going to hope I'm dying. They're like, oh, he's a B negative. Like, let's go. It's time.
No, it's just not true.
Yeah. Those are probably just his other family members or her other family members hoping. So.
Okay.
Perfect.
Very interesting. Well, I mean, if you have more information, have at it. But if not, I'm going to move on to my next question.
Well, I'll just add one more thing about a myth. Some people think they're too old to be organ, eye, and tissue donors. And what we try to emphasize and encourage people to do is say yes, and then let medical professionals, if the time emerges, let them decide. There was a kidney donor this past year who was in his 90s, and he was in great health. He was able to save a life by donating a kidney, and being in his 90s, he was not too old. So if you exclude yourself by thinking, well, I'm not in good enough health, I'm too old, or whatever other misnomer you might have about yourself, don't do that. Don't disqualify yourself. Say yes, be willing, and then let a medical professional determine if you're viable or not.
Yeah, because if your kidney was failing and the doctor says, well, it's 6 months before it's gone, and you're able to get a kidney that they're saying is a 10-year kidney, you'd much rather have that 10-year kidney than what you have. So a lot of people don't understand that either.
Okay.
For sure. I do have a question for you, jump in yours. So one of the things that a lot of people don't really think about, quite frankly, is organ donation. You guys mentioned that you try to encourage more people to be donors. And I'll be honest, even myself, like the only time I ever thought about organ donation is first time I got my driver's license and when Rufus called me asking if I knew what Donor Connect was. So it's one of those things, like, it's just so passive in a lot of people's minds that they don't, you know, engage with that frequently. It's like, what kind of techniques are, like, what do you guys do to implement that in people's minds and make them more likely to be a donor?
So we do have a public education and public relations department within Donor Connect. And that's part of Mark as the director. And then I also work for that as their multicultural outreach specialist. So a lot of the things that we're doing is we do we're in the high schools. So we do, and junior high. So we do the health departments, driver's ed. We go out into community events. We have a social media presence. So on LinkedIn, Facebook, Insta, and then we're going to be getting into like TikTok, Snapchat. We do a lot of local advertising with with an advertising organization that's here. And then we're just out in the communities, anywhere and everywhere that we can be, to just try and not necessarily to force people to become organ donors, but just to educate and just say, hey, you know, that's why I brought, you know, the path. Let's say, hey, read about it.
Right.
Because for me, I feel that education is key. And the more you know, the more you understand, the more likely you are to make a decision and not have to wait until it's affecting you, but to realize that you can make a difference prior to that. And if you're not part of that 1% that your heart or your kidney or your, you know, your lung goes to someone else, there are still other parts that can be used for donation. So if you think about bone, skin grafts for someone who's a burn victim, when you go to the dentist and they're doing things, chances are if you've been to the dentist and you've had some dental work, it's from an organ donor. So there's a lot of different things that is used for, not just for saving their lives in that way, but also enhancing and making other people's lives better.
That's really, really cool. You mentioned you guys are out in the communities. So if you could just point out just upcoming events or specific communities that you guys go to a lot more.
I'm glad you asked about that event. I'm proud of the school education program that Rufus alluded to. We have a team of 13 public education presenters. And they are in nearly 200 schools on an annual basis, talking with more than 40,000 kids per school year. The idea is that when someone is in junior high, they have one of these presenters present to their health class. And then when they're in high school and taking driver's education, again, they get the same presentation. And it's basically a general overview about what organ, tissue, and eye donation is all about. And the goal that our presenters have in presenting that information to students in junior high and high school is to go home and have a conversation with your family. It's, as Rufus said, it's not a hard sell. We're not trying to get kids to pressure them into making a decision about something that maybe they should thoughtfully and deliberately approach. It's more about going home and having a conversation. I'll give you an example. Prior to working at Donor Connect, my daughter came home from her school class. This is about 5 years ago. She's 14 years old, and she brought the pamphlet, and she said, "Mom, Dad, are you guys organ donors? We had a presenter today at our class, and we had a great conversation about it." That's the goal, is to just create awareness among kids that can grow into awareness among families that can grow into awareness throughout entire communities.
And almost all of our presenters have a direct connection as well. A lot of them, it's been their children that have transitioned. And so that's why it's important for them to be into the schools to talk about that decision that was made and how that decision saved other people's lives. So I think it's really, really important. And it affects everyone. No one is safe from it. That's why the hardest thing is when you have a case that starts, a transplant case at Primary Children's Medical Center, because children are born with some kind of birth condition or something happens to them. And I think that's probably one of the hardest is those cases. So it happens everywhere. You're not too young, you're not too old. And that's why the importance of talking with your children, even at a young age. And as an adult, you can have your children registered to be organ donors at a younger age as well. So,
and to that point, organ donation doesn't start when somebody winds up in the hospital. It starts when there is a conversation in a family. And when somebody who's 14 years old starts thinking about, hey, I wonder if that's something that I could do. That's when organ donation starts. And that's why the public education effort of Donor Connect is so important, is because we're trying to instill those thoughts at a very early age in kids and in families when those conversations take place.
Very deep stuff. It makes you wonder, and like, after today, I'm going home and I'm going to reach out to my family members. Like, are you organ donors? And what do you know about this? Mm-hmm. So I really do appreciate the information. I think it hits home when we talk about, you know, your kids and your families. And so really good stuff.
Yeah. There's a real world impact on it and everything. Mm-hmm. Do you guys often see any pushback from people saying, no, I don't want to be an organ donor ever?
Sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. Are there any examples?
Well, there's certain cultures.
Okay.
Certain communities where we want to help educate, but at the same time, we don't want to trample tradition, okay? A good example would be in southeastern Utah. The Native American population is very, very strong in Blanding, Utah, and other areas of southeastern Utah. The Navajo Nation is down there. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some real cultural, some real traditional kinds of beliefs among that group of people. And so we want to have the utmost respect for culture, for traditions, and the beliefs of any given group of people. But we also want to educate. Hmm. Good example is that we recently hired a community liaison who lives in Blanding, Utah. This individual is Native American, part of the Navajo Nation. And she happens to believe that organ, eye, and tissue donation is something that is of great benefit. She's had personal experience with it. And so she's helping to deliver a message to her people about what it's all about.
And we are seeing a transition. And that part of that is what my position is, to go out into the communities of color, the marginalized areas, the underserved, and to try and help them to understand that things are changing. So it's definitely an uphill battle due to historically what America has in the past. And how can I say this? Mm-hmm. In the past, there were decisions that were made that were not in the best benefit of all. Things like, you know, the Title X project, the Tuskegee experiments, where basically the government lied to communities of color, sterilization, you know, those kinds of things. So there's a natural distrust with communities of color in regards to anything that seems like it's a government type anything or something that would come into, well, I'm an African American, and if I become an organ donor, my heart's just going to go to Caucasian male, which unfortunately that has been the case. But those things are changing. Just in 2023, the government erased what we call a racial disparity. Mm-hmm. It was brought to light, and purely because a person was an African American, they were given less points on a kidney transplant list. So it would drop them down. But, you know, so as society progresses and all of how these things, and I don't know if it's the digital age where they're digitizing paperwork, but they're starting to see that these disparities and things, and they're reversing those. So that's one part of it. And the other part is just getting our communities of color to understand that in order to make a difference, you have to be the difference. And you have to step forward and you have to say, you know what, it may have been this way before, but now I'm going to sign up to be an organ donor. And then I'm going to not only do that, but I'm going to push the legislature into making, you know, better laws and things like that so that it can be more equal and fair. And so that's kind of part of what I do is I go out into these communities and just give education and say, yeah, things are changing. We have a program in the driver's license divisions. You can go to any of your local driver's license divisions. You'll see our tribute plaques that we have up that highlight people of color. So we just did one in Tooele with Lincoln Powers. It was an African-American young man that unfortunately passed away at a young age. Our Salt Lake City driver's license, we have a Native American, I believe, that's in that one.
West Valley.
Yep. So we are, at Donor Connect, we're very forward-thinking, not only with how we're approaching communities of color and educating, but, you know, also within the organization. As well as we're very forward thinking, we're very pro DEIB, There were some issues with the legislature that just happened with that. But at Donor Connect, we are very forward-thinking. We are for the community and showing how important it is to become an organ donor, not only to raise the numbers, which saves lives of other people of color, because you have genetic matches as well. It's not just, well, let's see. So like, if I'm an O positive and you're B negative, you can't have my organ.
That's not going to work.
Yeah, no. It doesn't work that way. So you have to be able to say, okay, this O positive will work with this O positive and what a genetic match is, because you don't want to put an organ into someone that is just going to fail.
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason why it's important for communities of color to actually sign up to be donors and then to keep moving forward.
Okay. You know, let's say we have members that reach out to us and that want to actually come in and start the process. What do they need before they head on over? And, you know, is there a fee to this? That's always like the first question.
There's no fee.
No fee.
There's okay. No fee. You literally just sign up. You don't have to have it's not a lot of evasive information. Again, you can go to donorconnect.life, sign up there. We have our national database that you can sign up. Donate Life. Is it Donate Life America?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. But locally, you can just go to donorconnect.life, and it has all the information that you'll need. We'll be able to answer questions for you and so forth. And there's no fee.
There's a button that you push on the button to say register, and you register. It's that simple.
All right.
There's no fee. A lot of people maybe forget that they've even registered. There is, in the registration process, the opportunity to specify whether it's all organs or whether you want to make it exclusive to just heart or lungs or liver, whatever. And so it's a very self-explanatory process. And once you're registered, you're registered. You can go back and reverse that decision if you ever decided to.
Okay. Is there, you know, a window where they can change their mind, or is there any repercussions when they do? Or?
Not at all.
Wow.
No repercussions. You can register, and the next day, if you decided not to, you can unregister. No time frames whatsoever.
Very good. Wow.
Going back a little bit with what Rufus was talking about, one of the things that we talked about prior to the podcast was just how you guys are bringing more representation for underserved communities, mm-hmm. and how that really does make a difference. And I don't think that people quite understand the true value of representation, because, you know, it's hard for someone to look at that and relate to it in a sense. So if you guys want to go over that a little bit more, that'd be great.
Well, I mean, part of what I do is each year, like, I have a booth at the Asian Festival, the Polynesian Days, the Hispanic Heritage Festival. This year coming up, and Yvette, you had asked this question, we've got Spring Fest that's coming up April 26th in West Valley at the Utah Cultural Center, Celebration Center there. We have, we're going to be doing the Native American powwow up in Heber. So we'll be there for that. We'll be doing the Pride Parade again this year, the Murray City Parade, again, the Utah Asian Festival, which is going to be on June 8th. We're going to be doing the Warriors Over the Wasatch Air Show up at Hill Air Force Base on June 29th and 30th, and then a bunch of other things. So we're working with a lot of local community churches. We have programs where we're giving to the food banks. So our organization gathers food and we'll give that to the food banks. We have clothing drives that we're doing. We're going to be starting a technology drive. So, you know, a 2-year-old laptop that, you know, just has another, you know, Windows 10 might be slow to us. But if you think about an immigrant family or an underserved community that, you know, and nowadays, you know, everybody's homework is on computers anyways. But if we can do something like that to get some of those laptops and tablets that we're recycling back into the community, that's part of what Donor Connect does. So we're not just asking for you to sign up to be organ donors, but we're also giving back to the community.
Mike, I want to point out that the role that Rufus occupies used to be called the Minority Outreach Specialist. And we recently, well, a year ago, changed it to be Multicultural Outreach Specialist.
Mm-hmm.
The job description, I don't know that it changed a whole lot, but I think that the message of that title speaks volumes. It's not just about reaching out to minorities, it's about reaching out to cultures. And so when Rufus talks about participating in the Pride Parade, or reaching out to religious organizations and churches, it opens things up quite dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
If not in reality, at least in one's mind, the fact that it's not just minorities, it's cultures that we're trying to reach out to and touch and educate and develop relationships with.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a very noble cause. And, you know, I'm glad that you guys are certainly doing that.
And again, I would emphasize that we want to be culturally sensitive at all times with all people. It's not a hard sell. We're selling nothing. There's no monetary value that we are trying to collect for ourselves. It really is altruistic in that we're just trying to create a greater resource that can be drawn upon when someone needs a life-saving transplant of any kind.
Donor Connect is a nonprofit, so we're not like some of the bigger organizations. We're a nonprofit.
Yeah, and going back to the statistics you guys gave me earlier, like, these are real numbers. Like, I think that some people can look at this and be, oh, it was like 43,000 people saved through organ donation. And people don't quite grasp the true impact that that has because they don't relate it to themselves. I often do see that. And like when I'm teaching a defensive driving class, for example, I'll be like, you know, 273 people died on Utah roads last year. And people aren't quite grasping that until you're like, what if it was like your friend or your brother or sister? And then they truly understand the impact that it has. So seeing numbers like 43,000 people saved and the actual real world impact that has, like, it can make a massive difference to someone who you may not know.
There are well over 100,000 people in the country, in the United States right now, that are on the transplant wait list. I think it's close to 110,000. And in Utah, it's over 800. It's probably around 900 persons in Utah. These are your neighbors. These are people in your communities whose lives will not continue in a productive way unless they get a life-saving transplant. And so, yeah, Mike, these are our friends. These are our neighbors. These are the people in Utah that need help. And if someone is in a position, again, we don't wish it upon anybody to pass away, but if they do, and if they are in a position to help one of these people, then we encourage them to do so.
Let me add to that. We have what we call living donors. So you don't have, it's not necessarily when you transition. So you have people that we have a double transplant donors where you can live with one kidney. So a lot of people will direct donate. They will give one of their kidneys to a loved one or someone else and still live a completely normal life. The liver, and I don't know if you know this, but you can cut a third of your liver and it will regrow. So we have a lot of those as well when it comes mm-hmm. to living donation, which is another option for people. That's crazy,
cool.
Huh?
That's really cool.
Yeah. So you have people, they come in, they'll take, and I'm not exactly sure what the process is, but they take one third of the kidney, they'll put it into someone else, or the liver, sorry, the one third of the liver into someone else, and then it grows into a functioning liver, and the other person just lives.
So I guess my question is, for the living donors, do they know who they're donating to, and are they allowed to, you know, meet these people eventually, or, you know, what's that process like?
That's a great question. Living donation allows for the donor to know to whom they're giving. There's a lot more personal touch that's available there in the living donation process. When it's a deceased donation, there's all kinds of regulations, HIPAA regulations, and privacy issues that come into play. And so you don't always know to whom, a family doesn't know necessarily to whom their loved one's organs have been donated.
But you can.
So
there's stipulations.
One of the functions that Donor Connect plays is that we're this conduit. And so someone And I'm gonna give you an example. There's a person that is very close to our organization who about 10 years ago received a heart transplant. And he profoundly grateful that he received a heart. And he wanted to know who the donor family was, where this heart came from. And for 10 years, he would annually write a letter to the family. He didn't know who he was writing to. That letter would come to Donor Connect. We would forward that letter to the family. And for various reasons, the family just wasn't ready to interact with this individual. But again, annually, every year on the anniversary of his heart transplant, he would write this letter. And it was almost a letter of accountability to share with this family what he was doing with his life, what this gift meant to him in terms of being a husband and a father and what he was giving back to the community. He was being accountable to the family for the gift that he received. After 10 years, finally, the donor family felt like it was okay, like it was time, like they were ready to be able to interface with this individual who received the heart transplant. And it's a great story about how they met, how they now have that bond.
Can we talk about Saturday? I don't know if that's coming. Is that?
Please.
Have we put that out
yet? Yeah, we have. Go for it.
Okay, we put that out? Okay.
Yeah, we did.
So just recently, Saturday, we had a mother, husband, and brand new child, a baby, that met a donor, the donor family, the husband and the daughter for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah, just recently. And we were able to record that and we, you know, set the meeting up and everything. With the help of Nevada and Arizona, I believe it was. So we were able to record. News media was there. But the husband and the daughter were able to listen to their mother's.
Wow.
The mother and the wife's heartbeat for the first time. Yeah. Any Ooh. Other person. Yeah.
That's emotional.
So we have that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we were able to, first time we were able to get them together to do that meeting and to see. Yeah. To see. The dad and his daughter are listening to his wife's heartbeat in another person.
That's
for the first time. And the recipient of the heart actually named their child the middle name after the mother.
It doesn't stop. Okay, yeah. Well.
So I mean, those are the kind of stories and those are the kind of things that happen through the power of organ donation. Okay. So when people come out and, and they click yes, it might not be today. It could be, 40 years from now. But yeah, it's those things because now you have this young mother who now has a chance to raise her daughter.
Yeah.
Because someone else clicked yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Very emotional. So, that's very touching.
Glad you brought
that. I wasn't ready for that, sir.
And do you guys provide those sorts of resources on your website to kind of push people over that edge who might be on the fence as far as organ donation to show that impact?
We try to tell stories.
Okay.
And really when it comes right down to it, the public education component of Donor Connect is it's all about telling stories and helping people understand the impact that they can have when they say yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of those kinds of stories. We have a series on YouTube called The Gift of Life. Video series and many, many of these 3 to 5 minute video profiles of these types of stories, Yvette, like Rufus just shared.
And we have them on our, on our Donor Connect Facebook and Instagram. So it's a lot of different ones. We're really going to start focusing or trying to do more local stories because a lot of it is national stories and things like that. But we're really trying to home in on local stories as well. So
it's great.
But yeah, it's a lot of good things. We have a have someone else who she donated her kidney to a complete stranger in New York, but she lives out here just because she saw the story. And it's like, you know, this and the person that received or that needed the transplant was a New York City police officer, and she needed a transplant and she couldn't get one. And this person from Utah was like, hey, I'll give you one of mine.
Just like that. Well, really cool. Yeah.
And you can still live a healthy, full life with just one.
Okay.
So that's the crazy thing. Yeah. People run marathons, you know, and I mean, in a lot of ways too, it's very inspirational because when you received a second chance at life, we have people that received, you know, different, you know, types of organs that then decide to go to medical school because they want to give back. It just gives a different sense of purpose. I think once you realize, when you hear that, you know, you're going to pass away if you don't get, and then to get it, all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know what? I need to reevaluate some things in my life. That's pretty sweet.
You know, thank you so much for sharing that. We're definitely going to stalk you guys. We're going to follow you. We're going to like all your pages. And is there anything that, you know, the Utah Safety Council can do to help you more, to get the word out, to bring awareness? You know, what would you like from us or members, whoever's watching, listening? What can we do for you guys to just
this out there? The fact that we're here today, that you've allowed us to be part of this and address your audience means the world to us. We really, really appreciate just the opportunity to sit and talk with you. And that helps us get our message out. That helps us to encourage people to consider what it means to give the gift of life. And so we deeply appreciate that. The likes, the shares, the follows, all of that helps out a great deal. And we love just the idea of being able to collaborate with worthwhile, wonderful organizations in the state. It's about relationships and deepening our ties with the community and the people that serve the community. So we thank you.
Yeah, because I think we're in a lot of ways, both of our organizations are trying to do the some of the same things, which is we kind of all wish we didn't have a job because, you know, things would be better. You wouldn't have to worry about, you know, people that were, you know, driving certain ways are unsafe. You know, that's why you guys are here. Utah Safety Council is because you're here because people are not safe. So, you know, and the same thing with us is, you know, unfortunately, there's a need for organ donation. And so we're just trying to do what we can while we're here. But we appreciate you guys and what you're doing as well.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to see you at Polyfest. I go every year. So I'm going to look out for that booth. Mm-hmm. Stone, did you have anything to add or did you want to ask more questions?
I was just going to ask, do you guys have any like final remarks you want to make? Anything we didn't touch on that's really pressing to you guys?
April is National Donate Life Month. Okay. And so perhaps you and your viewers and listeners will hear some advertisements that we've secured on various media outlets here in Utah. National Donate Life Month. And there's some great things that are going on as part of National Donate Life Month. On April 1st, to kick off that month, we'll be doing at the Celebration of Life Monument. And maybe I should tell you a little bit about what that is. Downtown sure. Salt Lake on the southeast corner of Library Square, Donor Connect has the Celebration of Life Monument. And that is where we have many, many panels, large glass panels with the names inscribed of donors. And families can go there to honor their loved ones. It's a great place.
Yeah.
And so at the National, at the Celebration of Life Monument, we'll be doing a flag raising ceremony. We'll be honoring, the theme of that event is to honor emergency medical service workers. Generally speaking, when somebody winds up in an ER, often it's because of heroic efforts of firefighters and EMS workers. And so that'll be kind of the theme of that event on April 1st to kick off National Donate Life Month. We'll have free cookies for people.
Ooh.
So come on down.
I'll be there.
And then there's a number of other events. We'll be having flag raisings at the transplant centers in Utah during the course of April.
We'll be having in St. George the Heroes in Disguise walk run event that's taking place down there. So statewide throughout all of Utah, we'll be having various events in commemoration of National Donate Life Month.
And with that, we do have a lot of other events that happen throughout the year as well. Mm-hmm. So we have our, what is it, August, we have our 5K run mm-hmm. at Sugar House Park, 5K walk run. For some of us, it's walk.
Oh, yeah.
For some of us, it might be running, but we have that, which, you know, the public's invited to. They can go to our website and they'll get that information on how to register their team, stuff like that. We have tons of different events throughout the year, so just come to our website at donorconnect.life, and you can see what's happening, what's going on. I usually have my events and what's going on. We do a lot of stuff with West Valley City, Kearns, Salt Lake City. We do trunk or treats. We do, gosh, I'm trying to think the list. I can't even see. What do we have? Trunk or treats, powwows, food drives, clothing drives, festivals, parades, all of those kinds of things, just to get into the community, give back to the community. But yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, sounds like you guys are everywhere all the time.
We're
anytime.
Trying to be, yeah.
That's great. That's really good.
Yeah. Just so you know, this information. I mean, you see, you have some of our pamphlets here.
It's everywhere in our building.
Yeah. So you know, if someone wants a pamphlet, they can come either here to the Utah Safety Council, or they can come to Donor Connect, and we'll be more than happy to give them information about organ donation. I think they can go to the driver's license divisions as well. Mm-hmm. Has that information there also. So it's just about educating people so they can make a better decision about it. For themselves and their loved ones.
Perfect. And what day was that 5K? Because I may have a very easy sell for our president right now.
That 5K in St. George.
Oh, it's in St. George.
Yeah, it's on.
That might be a little harder.
We're a nonprofit. It's there's no money.
But t-shirts.
Yeah, t-shirts. Oh, no, so, I think August is when we usually have our Sugar House. We rent out all of Sugar House Park.
Yeah.
And we love for organizations and teams to come out and you know, just be supportive. You'll have it's another tearjerker because we have our memorial kind of wall where you have a bunch of different people that you can see where they their loved ones and a little information about them. We have these big posters that we put up around the park. We have auctions, we have silent auctions. We have some really good stuff. What did we have last year? Larry Miller donated some stuff.
The community is very
or the
generous.
Communities, yeah. Yes, a lot of different cool things that that I'm not eligible for, but it's okay. But yeah, so we're, you know, Donor Connect is not just an organ procurement organization. We're trying to be a community driven organ procurement organization. And so partnering with you guys and other organizations is what we're trying to do.
Okay. Audience question. Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. So how does it work if you were to go and register on your guys' website, but on your license, this is not a donor? How does that work exactly?
It's a great question. What is on your license doesn't necessarily drive what happens in the organ, tissue, and eye donation process. And so you may get a license and then a year later decide to register. And so if you appear to be eligible to be an organ, tissue, or eye donor, they will go to the registry. Our clinical people will go to the registry and look you up to see if you're there. And if you're there, then you're eligible.
So the driver's license is kind of just like a hub to it. So mm-hmm. you click there and then it goes to our website that goes into the national website. Mm-hmm. So if it's not there, you can always go to Donor Connect and then it will be and register there as well and see mm-hmm. if it's there.
And one more thing. Let's say that you never registered. It's not on your license. You're not in the registry. Our people in the hospital will still approach families. Now, the conversation is different. Mm-hmm. The conversation with somebody that is in the registry or whose license reflects them being a donor, it's a little bit different conversation than if somebody never registered, but they'll still have the conversation. And again, in a sensitive manner, approach a family
and talk about what it would mean to be an organ, tissue, or eye donor. But it's a different type of an approach.
Yeah, for sure.
One other thing I think that, so Donor Connect, we also provide grief support for people that are, that need it. So there's a lot of other programs that we do as well.
Yeah.
With our aftercare team and our clinical support teams and things like that. So it's more than just, hey, we need, you know, you're here for a transplant kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more that we do as an organization. So.
Oh, I know what he's gonna.
No.
We're gonna find out. So I got a question from our president, John Wojciechowski, who's going into the very deep lore of Grey's Anatomy season 15. And his question is, if there's one organ, but there's two people who are viable for it, and one's higher up on the list, hypothetically, in this situation of Grey's Anatomy season 15, again, it is an old crotchety smoker guy versus a very adorable young child. Is there actually like a priority system, or does it just go to him because he's the top of the list?
Okay, I'm going to answer this in two ways.
Yeah, it's not that simple.
First of all, doctors take the Hippocratic Oath.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, and I can't quote exactly what that is. I just know in concept that they will do whatever they can to save a life. So there's that aspect. And then there's the aspect of all of the variables that go into determining how to match an organ with a recipient. And those variables are deeply clinical. It's beyond me to be able to describe what those variables are. I mean, it starts with blood match, and then there's a whole battery of other markers and variables that go into determining. And so to answer the question, a doctor is going to look at all of those variables and determine where that resource, a heart, a liver, a kidney, lung, whatever it is, where it's going to do the most good. And I don't think it's going to be based upon looks.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the... In the Grey's Anatomy world of television,
yeah,
because we all know that television is 100% accurate and the media gets everything correct.
Yes.
That's very, very simplified. And that was designed to say, you know, because human nature, we were like, no, give it to the little kid. Like the old dude, he's been around, he's worn out, he's not going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want you to be like. But unfortunately, people will go, oh man, yeah, that's messed up if the old guy gets it. But they don't factor in all of the other aspects of it. Mm-hmm. Like Mark was saying, there's so many different variables. Because let's just say that they, in a Grey's Anatomy world, everything matched up perfectly. And it was, what's his name? Doctor, what is it?
McDreamy?
Dr. McDreamy. I don't watch Grey's Anatomy.
McDreamy.
I don't watch that. But, you know, then he would say, let's see, who's going to get better ratings? If I give it to the old person or if I give it to the young kid, it's going to get me better rating. So that's kind of what they were. So, yeah, don't believe all the stuff you're seeing on Grey's Anatomy. Don't. Most of movies. Of course, Ordinary Angels was really good. We just premiered that. That was another thing we did. We did a movie premiere for Ordinary Angels last month, which is a really good movie about organ donation. But, yeah. Don't believe television. Don't.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah. You know, just go to our website or call us and ask the question.
To add to the, you know, Grey's Anatomy question, do you guys get a lot of Grey's Anatomy references, like as far as questions and, you know, information?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I haven't. Maybe Rufus has.
Okay.
But I'm out in the public a lot more.
Okay.
So I get a lot.
Okay.
I get very interesting things. But in all actuality, times are changing, perceptions are changing, laws are changing. And so what was is no longer what is. And so that's why it's important for people to become organ donors, because it's not just And I'm sure we've all heard the rich are the ones that get the organs and the poor don't. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that we're working on. We're working with like transplant funds and medical kind of things to make it more fair and equitable for everyone.
Okay. So, did you have anything to say? Any last comments?
Rufus killed it. Did a great job with that.
All right.
Well, so, they pay me the big bucks.
All right. I believe it.
You know what? We are a nonprofit. We're not a fundraising organization. I've been with organizations before that are nonprofits, and the primary effort was to raise money, and we don't. That's not what we do. We appreciate if donations are made, and some of these events that Rufus has talked about, there is a fundraising component associated with them, but we're not a fundraising organization, and so you're not going to hear us out asking for money everywhere we go. But if donations would like to be made to help further our public education efforts, we don't turn it down.
And we do have different families that have been affected by organ donation. One is, we have a family that every year the sisters, the younger sisters, will have a lemonade stand. And they sell lemonade. I think they've even upgraded to cake pops.
Yep.
And so they'll do that for like 1 month, and then they'll just take the proceeds and donate them to our organization. So we have, you know, some things like that where there's small individuals that are affected by organ donation that will do something, a community drive or something, and then donate that to us. But that's not our primary function. And that's not where we're out looking like, hey, you know, we need this, we need that.
And you mentioned that you have that at all your events, or, you know, on the community where you are, your booths, right? That
yes.
You donate. Okay.
Yes. Any of the events that I have or that we have, we do have an educational booth. We have swag that we give away. And then we have candy and stuff like that too.
Candy. So, okay.
Yeah. Candy.
Always good.
So, but yeah, we just do that, and people can come by. If they have questions, they can ask questions. You know, they can sign up if they want to. And we're just there to educate and say, hey, you know, what questions do you have? How can we dispel the Grey's Anatomy stuff and go from there?
Okay. All right. Any more questions from our viewers, our live audience here? Okay. Well, you know what? We just want to thank you so much. This was a really great opportunity to get to know, you know, who Donor Connect is, what you guys do, and what your, you know, your mission is for the community, for, you know, human life pretty much. And we just want to, like, offer, we're just really thankful, and we are going to be your biggest supporters. Again, we're going to like all your pages, we're going to follow you, we're going to be wherever you're going to be. And with that being said, thank you so much for joining us here at Speak Up with the Safety at the Utah Safety Council. We will be connecting with you a lot more, so
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Woo-hoo. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
That was good. You
I need to wear a waterproof mascara when we do these things.